This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, August 30th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm David Schoenfeld, filling in for Buster. Taylor, how you doing? I just want to start off by saying I would never give you a thumbs down, no matter how bad of a job you do producing this podcast.
I appreciate that, David. I would never give you a thumbs down for really anything. I feel like we've grown close over the last two seasons. So, we're fellow Central Connecticuters. So no thumbs down on this podcast, at least for those involved today.
No, but we did have a thumbs down situation in New York yesterday, Taylor. This is the talk of baseball. I have never seen anything like this, at least not since Ted Williams raised a certain digit to Red Sox fans back in the day. But Javier Baez, Francisco Lindor, and Kevin Pillar, among others, thought it would be cute to give a thumbs down gesture after certain plays. And after the game, Javi Baez explained this in a post-game Zoom call with reporters.
What does the thumbs down celebration after a big hit mean?
This is the boost that we get. You know, we're not machines. We're gonna struggle. You know, we're gonna struggle seven times out of 10. And you know, It just feels bad when we strike out, when I strike out and I get booed. You know, it doesn't really get to me, but like I want to let them know that when we success, we're gonna do the same thing to let them know how it feels. You know, because if we win together, then we gotta lose together. You know, and the fans are really big part of it. So in my case, they gotta be better. You know, I play for the fans and I love the fans, but you know, if they're going to do that, they're just putting more pressures on the team. And that's not what we want.
Wow. I mean, Baez, he did have a two-run homer in the game, and the Mets did win. But there's no running from this controversy, Taylor. Luis Rojas spoke about it as well after the game.
Baez says the thumbs down is basically players booing the fans.
No, I didn't know that that's what he meant. I mean, they've been doing all sorts of salutes from the dugout to on the bases. So I didn't know there was any intention of giving anything back to the fans. You know, Javi, like I said, Javi probably learning this experience because this is new for him. That's where he's coming from with this. You know, this is something that maybe other players go through when they come and play here. And sometimes they hear some of the reactions. So, you know, it's something that, and I think knowing Javi, I mean, this kid is a really good player. And he's a really good kid. So, you know, something that will be part of his learning experience here.
Taylor, we'll get into all this when Buster rejoins us later as today's special guest, what this means for Baez, what it means for the Mets. As you can guess, this escalated hurry in New York, the back page of the New York Daily News today reads Mets, go to hell fans. And then last night, Mets president Sandy Alderson had to release a statement which read in part, quote, Mets fans are understandably frustrated over the team's recent performance. The players and the organization are equally frustrated, but fans at Citi Field have every right to express their own disappointment. Booing is every fan's right. The Mets will not tolerate any player gesture that is unprofessional in its meaning or is directed in a negative way toward our fans. I will be meeting with our players and staff to convey this message directly. And then Mets owner Steve Cohen had a tweet as well saying, I miss the days when the biggest controversy was the black jerseys. Taylor, I don't know. What's your quick thoughts on this?
This is so amazing. I saw in real time, like one of the highlights pop up on Twitter and he's doing the thumbs down. I was just like, all right, this is topic number one on the podcast tomorrow. I can't believe that they would think that this is a good idea because now they're just going to get it for every game until the end of the season. Like what do they think is going to happen? Like they're trying to make some statement, but it's surely going to backfire. I can't believe they had no foresight on this.
Yeah. We all know the way New York fans can react and boy, are they going to react. I can't wait to watch that next game at Citi Field because it's going to get ugly. No doubt about it. On Sunday Night Baseball, the A's and the Yankees finished off a four-game series. A's got a split. Paul Blackburn threw five scoreless innings, his first win. Well, he didn't end up getting the win, but The A's led 1-0 in the seventh inning. This happened.
The pitch. Swing and a grounder on one hop through the legs of Chapman, and it gets into left field. Sanchez around third. He will score. Rizzo goes to second, and the Yankees have tied the game.
That was from ESPN Radio, a rare mistake by Matt Chapman. And then in the bottom of the eighth, the game tied 1-1. Tony Kemp batting against Chad Green.
The pitch and a fastball. Kemp, a drive deep down the right field line toward the corner. It's gone. Home run. Tony Kemp, the fifth home run this season for Kemp, and his third against the Yankees. And a huge home run for the A's. It gives them a 3-1 lead.
And they win with that final score. That's also from ESPN Radio. Again, they split that four-game series. Two big wins for the A's to finish the weekend. Meanwhile, the team the A's are chasing in the wild card, the Indians, or the Red Sox, playing the Indians. The game was tied 5-5 when this happened in the bottom of the eighth.
The pitch. A swing and a smash over the bag at third. Down the left field line. Ricocheting into the corner. Mercado being waved home. Here comes the throw to the plate. Tagged out 10 feet before he got to the plate. Wait a minute. The run counts. We're getting interference called on the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, Taylor, that was a strange play. Oscar Mercado, as he was rounding second, ran into a Red Sox infielder. Then as he was rounding third, he almost ran into the Red Sox pitcher. So what was an easy out turns into interference, the go-ahead run. Cleveland ends up winning 7-5, a big, big loss for the Red Sox as they led most of that game. Baseball's crazy. That highlight, by the way, is from WTAM 1100. Another team chasing the wild card, the Blue Jays. This happened in the fourth inning, Kevin Smith at the plate.
And have gone as Smith launches one high and deep. This one's got a chance. Grossman gets back to the wall, and it's gone! The first major league home run for Kevin Smith. He finally finds it in Detroit.
Big win for the Jays, 2-1 over Detroit. They're 5.5 behind the Red Sox, Taylor, but I don't know. Don't count them out. 10 of their last 33 games are against the Orioles. And we saw what the Rays did to your beloved Orioles, finishing the year 18-1 against them. So that could be 10 wins for Toronto and get them right back in with Boston in the wild card race.
Yeah, at least 8 there. Oof, that's tough. I feel bad for the Blue Jays. I feel like they're playing really well and they just can't make up any ground in this race here. It's tough.
Yeah, the trouble with them is they got to leap Seattle, they got to leap Oakland, and then they got to leap Boston. So they're chasing three teams, but they can do it. We can see what kind of offense they can put together. And yeah, if they go 8-2, 9-1 against Baltimore, they're going to be right back in it. Finally, the White Sox rolled over the Cubs 13-1. This happened in the fifth inning.
Drive the other way. She's gonna go. That is a 3-run bomb. It's 8-1.
That was Eloy Jimenez, and that's on ESPN 1000. Much needed win for the White Sox, who've been kind of struggling a little bit lately. Finally, a little bit of news here. The Pirates released veteran outfielder Gregory Polanco, longtime right fielder there. Basically, they're going to give some young players some chance down the stretch here. So that makes sense. And then, I don't know if you watch any of the Little League World Series, Michigan wins it, Taylor. For the first time since 1959, they beat Ohio 5-2. Pretty dramatic ending. Ohio had the bases loaded, two outs, sixth inning, the last inning, fly out to center field. So grand slam would have won it there, but Michigan wins. Taylor North Little League, congratulations.
Congrats to the fellow Taylors out there. And Dave, real quick, before we get to Buster, I got to promote two things here on the docket. First of all, Better Days. If there's a game someone's betting on, it, stream season 2 of Better Days, the Mike Greenberg hosted series that brings true stories of unforgettable gambling adventures to life. All episodes are now streaming only on ESPN Plus. And Dave, I'm doing this podcast every day, but The College Football Podcast is back. I will be working on that twice a week because that is now 5 days a week. And we've got a nice little rotation situation going. If you listened to the show last year, you'll know it's a little different. We're going Sundays through Thursdays. Show comes out probably late morning every day, and it's a different pairing every day. So first you've got Matt Barry and Paul Feinbaum on Sundays. Then you've got Matt Barry and Kirk Herbstreit on Mondays. You've got Reese Davis and David Pollack on Tuesdays, Kevin Negandhi and Booger McFarlane on Wednesdays, and then again, Kevin Negandhi and Joey Galloway on Thursday. So I'm very excited about this show. You should check it out. The ESPN College Football Podcast. You can listen, rate, and review that podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Excellent. Any chance Michigan beats Ohio State in college football this year?
Minimal chance, minimal chance. Ohio State's breaking in a new quarterback, but I mean, they're a reload team, and Michigan always a question mark at quarterback. They're always a quarterback away at Michigan. So I don't have high hopes for them, but you know,
yeah, it's they've been a quarterback away for about 25 years now. It feels like
that's tough.
All right. That's good. Make sure you guys check out the College Football Podcast this year.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. But for your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate unloading and loading of passengers.
We bring aboard the great Buster Olney. Buster, it looks like you're in an airport or a bathroom, or I can't tell. I see a lot of white tile on the ceiling there.
Yeah, it's I'm in the world's busiest airport in Atlanta next to gate D34, waiting for a connection off a red eye coming out from San Francisco overnight. You know, and it was funny because I was thinking, man, I'm going to be tired on Monday morning. And I don't know if I'm going to have anything to talk about with Dave. And I hope I've got something. And then, boy, the Mets provided.
Man, I mean, this kind of thing could only happen to the New York Mets. We went over all the details and when we talked about the news, but where does this organization go from here? I mean, first of all, what is your comment on the whole thumbs down situation?
I can't. It's mind boggling to me that you have, the players, the only three players that we know of so far. And, maybe there are other players who are doing the same thing. But we've heard about, of course, Javier Baez, because he was the guy out talking about it. We heard about Kevin Pillar, and we heard about Francisco Lindor doing this. And you're not talking about like three rookies who just came up from Class A in September who are upset about being booed. You're talking about guys who have years and years of experience in the big leagues. And my first thought was, did anyone say, you know what, this isn't a good idea? Like, and how about, you know what, we don't like the fact that they're booing us, but you know what, we're not playing very well. And as Derek Jeter once said, Ian O'Connor, the great Ian O'Connor, had a line in his column today in the New York Post talking about this. Derek Jeter once was asked about being booed, and he said, yeah, the way I'm playing, I'd boo me too.
Yeah.
Where's the accountability here?
Yeah, I've read that quote before as well. Yeah, I mean, What does it point to? Is it a lack of leadership? Even if, you know, Baez and Lindor and Pilar or whoever else was involved kind of conspired in the background to do this, after the first time it happened during the game, does nobody step forward and say, guys, this is ridiculous. You cannot do this. Obviously, nobody did because it happened more than once. So to me, it just looks like a complete lack of leadership, whether it's the manager and coaching staff or from within with the players themselves.
Boy, and the individual, you're right about that. And obviously today, I mean, Sandy Alderson saying he's holding a team meeting. My goodness, like everything coming out of that team meeting. First off, Javier Baez will again do a Zoom after Sandy Alderson does. Sandy will come out and say, this is what we told the players. You're no longer allowed to do the thumbs down. You're not allowed to do gestures that were aimed at the fans. And then Javier Baez is going to come out because you know that probably people in his agency who represent him preparing for his free agency in the fall were throwing themselves in front of traffic last night. Like, oh my God, like you just burned a bridge with one of the biggest spending teams in all of baseball. You know, there's no way that the Mets after this incident would sign him to a long-term contract. And you got to believe that there'd be other front offices that also will look at this and go, wait a second, judgment that bad? Right. We're going to bring in a guy for $150, $180 million. He turned down a deal just under $180 million from the Cubs. And after him, then comes Francisco Lindor, who probably has the most healing to do in this situation than anybody, more than Sandy Alderson, more than Steve Cohen, more than Javier Baez, because Francisco Lindor is in year one of this massive contract.
Yeah, that was my thought is, okay, Baez, you can walk away from at the end of the year. He'll go somewhere else. He's not going to get that contract on top of this. He's not having a great year. But Lindor, with that deal, he's a Met. He's untradeable. He's your face of your franchise, basically, now, along with Jacob deGrom. But that, what do you do? Is there any chance the Mets even consider just blowing this whole thing apart? It's been that bad of a year. You can't trade Lindor. DeGrom, who knows what his health is going to be long term. You have a piece kind of going over some of this today on ESPN. But where do the Mets go after this year into the offseason, and how do you build for 2022?
Before I answer that, I'm going to give you a quick sidebar. Here's my theory about this whole thing about Javier Baez. I think it pushes him most likely back to the Cubs. Like yeah. Everything that's happened, they're going to have money to spend. They wanted to sign him in the spring of 2020. I don't know if it's going to be for the money they talked about then, which, as I said, was just under $180 million. But you know what? Given the fact that, you know, maybe the Mets and other big market teams will shy away, I think this increases the chances that Baez goes back to the Cubs. Okay, to your question. Look, what my piece was all about was if you're Steve Cohen and your first year, you've just finished up, you're finishing up your first season. It looks like you're not going to make the playoffs. What is the bedrock for this organization? Is it the front office, which, let's face it, in terms of decision making, has not been sterling, right? Their best move during the offseason, it appears, was to sign Taijuan Walker, and that only happened after they swung and missed at Trevor Bauer. They nearly signed Trevor Bauer instead. So that's the track record of the front office. You know, Sandy Alderson, while he put out that statement last night, as you know, he hasn't been out in the public eye very much since he made some controversial statements early in the year. Is Steve Cohen have find bedrock in the front office? I don't know. What about the manager, Luis Rojas? You know, I've heard from sources that his status is very uncertain moving forward. So it's not like you have, an Alex Cora or an AJ Hinch or, you know, a Bob Melvin established manager. So you're not getting that in your staff. And among your players, you referenced it. Jacob deGrom, as we sit here today, we have no idea if he's going to pitch again this year. We don't know how much he's going to pitch next year. We don't know if he's going to need surgery at some point. And within their lineup, if you look at Francisco Lindor and his adjusted OPS plus, what he's done this year is consistent with the trend line that he established in 2018. It's been going down since then. Clearly, there are adjustments that he needs to make. And this only complicates that. So when you and I'll throw this in there too. I've talked to evaluators of other teams over the weekend about their farm system, and they say it's really not very good.
Yep.
So if you are Steve Cohen, what exactly, where are you setting your pillars as we move forward? That's why a lot of the conversations I had with executives over the weekend with other teams were boy, there are going to be some changes over with the Mets. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, you mentioned Luis Rojas, you know, not that he created this situation, but his inability to react as it was happening yesterday, fair or not, that's a big strike against him on top of, you know, all the struggles this year. Once again, the Mets unable to keep their players healthy. How many years do we have to talk about all the Mets injuries year after year after year? Noah Syndergaard, his rehab, you know, now he tested positive for COVID and that gets pushed back. He couldn't pitch yesterday.
I forgot about that, Dave. I forgot about that.
I know that was like going to be our big story of the day, you know, and, you know, so it's unbelievable what is going on here. Steve Cohen, his reaction is to make a jokey tweet about this. I don't know how to read into that.
Well, I would say this. He had a jokey tweet then, but you can bet that he talked to Sandy Alderson earlier in the day.
Yeah.
I bet you that conversation wasn't so jokey.
Right. And you've mentioned this before, you know, Steve Cohen brought Sandy Alderson back, you know, as an experienced leader. But is he going to be in this position next year along with, you know, Zach Scott, right, who's the interim GM? I think they're going to clean house in the front office. And I have no idea who they might go after, but I can see a house cleaning there. Manager, front office, and players.
Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be a house cleaning per se with the front office, but I do think there's going to be changes. And really what it comes down to, the most important, you know, who holds the power in terms of the decision-making. Sandy, you know, he was brought in to help Steve's case to be ushered through past the owners. He was a figure of credibility among the owners that was brought on board to be the president of the team. And then he, you know, the Mets tried to hire some experienced people. They reached out to some of the best and brightest people in the sport, say, hey, come and run baseball ops. And the experienced guys all ran in the other direction, which is how Sandy landed on Jared Porter, who subsequently was let go. You know, Sandy's hiring was let go because of, you know, those pictures that came out, the sexual harassment case, the fact that he's been banned from baseball. And Zach Scott, who's basically supposed to be in the chain of command and assistant general manager, was elevated to, you know, the status of general manager. I would not at all be surprised if the Mets go back into the conversations with experienced people with other teams and say, look, we need somebody to come on in. You know, one name I heard in speculation a lot over the weekend was David Stearns, the Milwaukee Brewers, you know, who is from this area. You know, he's someone who grew up a Mets fan. He obviously is very accomplished. And if you're Steve Cohen, you might be offering him Long Island to come back and try to create some stability based on where they are today.
Yeah, that's a great point. Obviously, David Stearns has done an unbelievable job in Milwaukee. Hey, I got a fix, though, for you, Buster. Robinson Cano is coming back next year at $20 million.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I have no idea what they can do. You know, obviously, we have the whole CBA, you know, to work through to learn what the salary cap, the luxury tax may or may not be. We have no idea if Steve Cohen is ready to blow past that. You know, they didn't do it this year. You know, even though they signed Lindor, they're still under that tax. They have a bunch of free agents. Like you said, their farm system, a couple good prospects, but no depth. I have no idea how the Mets fix this.
So I asked, and in particular, two interesting situations for the Mets as they move forward. Noah Syndergaard is a free agent at year's end. And I asked some people with other teams, do you give a qualifying offer to Noah Syndergaard? And do you give a qualifying offer to Michael Conforto? And it surprised me how many people were saying yes on both.
Huh.
That Syndergaard, because if you give him a qualifying offer, odds are, like Kevin Gausman with the Giants last winter, he probably will wind up taking it. You know, because it's not like some team is going to step up and offer him a six-year deal for Syndergaard. It would make sense to be on a one-year deal in 2022. And that way, and if he happens to decline it, then guess what? You could get a draft pick potentially in return. And with Michael Conforto, has been so bad this year, if you give him a qualifying offer, the feeling among folks with other teams is he probably will get a multi-year deal with another team, and then you'd get a draft pick in return. But that surprised me a little bit, that there was such strong sentiment with folks working in other front offices like, yeah, you're giving qualifying offers to both those guys. What do you think?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, the qualifying offer has been around, what, 18 to 19 million in recent years. You know, it's a pretty risk-free investment for the Mets. You know, that there's a lot of upside on both those players if they do accept it. I'm with you. Syndergaard, he hasn't pitched in 2 years.
How about that?
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know.
$19 million for a guy who hasn't pitched in a couple
years. Yeah, I mean, they're still hoping he comes back in September to pitch in relief. We'll see if that happens. Conforto, yeah, it's one bad year after, you know, 5 or 6 good years. So I'm with you. I think teams will be in on him. Yeah, so I can see that the Mets do that. I still think they need a, you know, they need a answer in center field. You know, move Brandon Nimmo over to a corner. Javier Baez would have been a nice fit at second base with Jeff McNeil, you know, moving back into kind of a utility role, but that's not going to happen. So maybe they just live with McNeil at second for another year. They need a third baseman. To me, JD Davis just does not have the glove to play there. Yeah, it's a mess. New York Mets. That's one of the year after year after year. So, all right, let's move on to another topic. Buster, you were in Oakland last night. The interesting game last night, the A's take what, the last 2 games of that series. Any big takeaways from what you saw with the Yankees and the A's?
I really feel like that the Athletics saved their season on Saturday and Sunday, because it absolutely felt like after they got blitzed by the Yankees in the first 2 games, like it was a heavyweight against the light middleweight in terms of where the lineups are and how much the Athletics have struggled. Think about this. And I didn't check last night, but I'm pretty sure this is the case. I don't think the Athletics haven't reached double-digit hits in a game in 13 consecutive games. Wow. Okay. So they really struggled. And on Saturday, Frankie Montas won out and gave them the type of performance you need to turn around. They win that game. And then yesterday, which was surprisingly, with 2 pretty good defensive teams, all kinds of mistakes, 2 great third basemen, Gio Urshela, Matt Chapman making errors all over the place. But a guy, Tony Kemp, got a big hit, Vanderbilt guy with a 2-run homer in the bottom of the 8th inning. Boy, did they need this. And I don't – I'm curious to, you know, what Bob Melvin would think today. I don't think it's a coincidence that it happened after Chris Bassitt returned to the clubhouse. Because what you heard from Oakland people is that Chris Bassitt is that rare starting pitcher who is a leader of, you know, all players on the team. Most of the time, you know, the starting pitchers are over on one side and the position players are over on the other side. But Chris Bassitt's been with that organization for so long and has such credibility and is apparently such a great source of positivity. The players are all heartened by having him around. And if you're superstitious, he took the lineup card out on Saturday. And they won. And then he took the lineup card out on Sunday and they won. And I guarantee you, Dave, the next time they play, he'll be taking the lineup card out.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's such a great symbol of that organization, a guy who came up, you know, not a prospect, nothing ever expected of him. And, you know, he was pitching himself into the Cy Young race this year before he got hit by that line drive. So, yeah, and Tony Kemp, we all love Tony Kemp, especially anybody I can look in eye to eye when I interview him is always one of my favorites. Yeah, so he had the big home run in the 8th inning. You know, a key to them is
– I was going to say one quick thing on Tony Kemp, remember. I mean, I've known him since he was an undergrad at Vanderbilt. He is such a, you know, a person of great starch. And, you know, maybe the best example of this is when he was with the Astros, you know, in 2017 when they had the sign stealing thing. And Tony Kemp, hearing about it, told his teammates, I don't want anything to do with it.
That's right.
Yep. They acknowledged it. And he's like, he made it clear. I don't want to be involved in this. We were just talking about the Mets with the thumbs down. And hey, where is somebody saying, stop doing this? Tony Kemp was a guy with the Astros who's like, I'm not getting involved in that.
That's a great point. You know, class individual, no doubt. You know, Starling Marte has been a huge, huge addition to that team. In fact, little oddball stat, he's going to finish in the top 10 in both the National League and the American League in stolen bases. Has he been the top deadline acquisition this year? I think you can make that argument.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He would be in the case. And look, it feels like that half the Braves team could be in that conversation too, with all the moves that Alex Anthopoulos made. But Starling Marte, and I didn't look at the updated numbers this morning, but going into that game on Sunday night, since he got traded to Oakland, a 345 batting average, 379 on base percentage, perfect in his stolen base attempts. One of the few sources of consistent offense for that team. When we talked to Bob Melvin yesterday before the game, you know, we asked him about, hey, does he have, I think Matt Puskurgin asked him, does he have the green light? And Bob said that when he got over to the Athletics, they asked him, hey, did you have the green light when you were with the Marlins? He goes, yeah. And he said, well, you'll have it here as well. He was so comfortable right from the get-go. David Forrest, the general manager of the Athletics, told me that when the trade went down, he calls Marte and basically says, hey, you know, midseason trade, which Marte's been through before. Are you okay? Y'all taken care of? And Marte was like the old pro. Yeah, don't worry about it. I got it. And he joined the Athletics and hit the ground running.
And I think it's a great point about Bob Melvin, too, about why he's such a great manager. The A's, historically, they don't run a lot, don't steal a lot of bases, yet they get a player that's kind of a different type of player for them, and he's willing to let that player play his game and not just the Oakland game. So kudos to Melvin for adapting to having a Marte on his roster.
100%. And, you know, Bob Melvin is in that conversation for one of the best managers in baseball. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just put you on the spot real quick here. The Red Sox hold that second wild card spot 2.5 up on Oakland. My Mariners are fading. They're 4.5 back. Toronto's 5.5 back. Who's your pick for that wild card right now?
Yankees and Red Sox.
Okay.
Yankees will play the Red Sox in the wild card game. I think the Rays, it was very funny talking with the Yankees people over the weekend. There was that, you know, feeling of those damn Rays. Yeah. the Yankees are obviously have been playing great up until the last 2 days, and they really haven't made up that much ground because are so consistent.
Yes, the Rays 18-1 against the Orioles this year. They finished that. So I don't know if the Yankees have any games against the Orioles. That might be their chance. But yeah, they're what, 6 back of Tampa Bay. So the Rays, they keep doing it. Last topic for today, Salvador Perez. He homered in all 4 games of their series against Seattle. 2 of those grand slams. He's homered 5 games in a row. He's up to what, 38 on the year? I mean, he's closing in on Shohei Ohtani for the Major League lead. What a season he's having.
Here is Salvi, and he's going to swing and hit it well down the left field line. Will it stay fair? It is off the foul pole, a home run. Salvador Perez does it again. He has homered in 5 straight games, tying Mike Sweeney's record. He ties the game 1-1. And that for Salvi is number 38 on the year.
Salvi Perez, he's been unbelievable. That sound from 610 KSCP. And Dave, you know what's interesting about him is I remember when I first heard his name, which was like in early June, that he might be part of the home run derby. My initial thought was, what? And then I thought about it. And then I, you know, went back and looked and see the adjustments that he's made at the plate. We saw it in 2020 and 2021. He is the epitome of what hitters would talk about selling out.
Yeah.
Like he is all in. Like he, at some point he made up his mind, you know what? I'm going to do damage. And I am going to hunt fastballs, and I'm going to look to do something here.
Yeah, it's amazing because you look at his strikeout to walk ratio, and you're like, why ever throw this guy a ball over the plate? What a career year. You know, the record for home runs by a primary catcher is Johnny Bench, 45 in 1970, although the most by a player as a catcher, Javi Lopez, had 42 in 2000. Now, Perez has DH'd a lot, only 26 as a catcher this year, but still one of the all-time great home run seasons for a catcher. And I got a little Salvi Perez story for you just to tell you how beloved this guy is in Kansas City. I have my Aunt Deb lives down there, total non-sports fan. She had a stroke back in 2014 when the Royals went to back-to-back World Series. And for the first time ever, as she was recovering, started watching baseball. And she sent me a text yesterday after he homered again saying, Salvi Perez made me love baseball. One guy can turn a non-sports fan into a baseball fan, and he is so beloved in Kansas City for all the right reasons.
And what a great dude. Like, yep. He's a guy, when you're around him, he's just so positive. I remember, seeing him at the Home Run Derby and him just giving me the biggest smile as he went up for his round. He just is someone rubs off on other players. You know, you love his relationship with the Royals, where he signed an extraordinarily team-friendly deal at the beginning. It was like a 5-year, $7 million deal. But, they valued him so much as a person and as a leader. And Dayton Moore, their general manager, is very progressive in his thoughts about the relationship between players and organizations. And they basically tear up that deal and say, you know what? We're going to pay you what you're worth and what you earn for the organization. He's one of those guys. I don't know if he's the best, home run hitting catcher of all time. I do know this. He's one of the best people that we have in the sport.
Yep. And we saw Yadi Molina just sign one more year with St. Louis. I think Salvador Perez will spend his whole career in Kansas City. Buster, thanks for doing this from the White Tile, the airport in Atlanta. Have a safe trip back home.
Thanks, Dave.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
On Sunday, Roxy Bernstein of ESPN Radio talked with Athletics third baseman Matt Chapman.
All right, Kevin, with Matt Chapman of the A's here, getting ready for the final game of the series in Sunday Night Baseball. And safe to say yesterday was a much-needed win for your ball club. When you get a win like yesterday's, does it kind of change the mood for everybody after the way the last week had gone?
It's nice to get that win. Every game at this point is very important for us, considering where we're at. It's nice to get that win, but I don't think our team was pressing or anything by any means. I mean, it sucks when you're losing. We're frustrated. We're not happy. But I think our team has a pretty special ability to, flush it and move to the next day. We don't carry too much baggage. But it is nice to get that win. And, now we have an opportunity to split this series and, hit the road, regroup, and, get on a streak here. So I think we feel good about it. And, we're just focused on getting that win today. And I think we'll put ourselves in a good spot with that.
Speaking of feeling good, Matt, what did Chris Bassitt coming back to the clubhouse after what he's been through the last couple of weeks mean just to everybody to see him again and back with you guys?
It means a lot. We haven't been playing too good lately, but I feel like both days we've seen Chris Bassitt, we've won baseball games. So his energy is definitely missed. He brings a lot of stuff to the table, whether it's on the field when he's pitching or off the field. He's a leader on this clubhouse, a leader for the pitchers, and having him around, and just I feel like you forget how much you miss somebody until you see him. So it's nice to see him, and I'm just glad that he's on the road to recovery. That's all that really matters.
You guys made some big pickups at the deadline. You get Starling Marte coming in, Josh Harrison, Yan Gomes, Andrew Chafin. What have those guys brought to this clubhouse, and how they contributed in your eyes?
Marte has brought a ton. For me, I feel like a fan sometimes when he's playing, because he gets on first base and you're like, when's he going to steal? When's he going to steal? So, and everybody knows he's stealing, but they still can't throw him out. So it's been pretty, I'm going to knock on wood really fast, but it's been pretty fun to have him. And you don't really get to appreciate some of the guys that you play against until you play with him every single day. And to see what he brings to the table has been special. Obviously, Josh Harrison, somebody that can play. He's already played short, second, third, left. I'm probably leaving something out, but he's hit all over the lineup. He's made great plays. Anywhere you put him on the diamond, it feels like he's like a Gold Glove defender. So to have somebody like that has been huge. Yan, it seems like every single time he goes to the plate, he's making, making hard contact. He's taking good at-bats. He calls a great game behind the plate. How you doing? Got to say hi to that guy.
And then it's only A-Rod.
Yeah, it's just A-Rod. For those of you who don't know who that is, Alex Rodriguez. But So, you know, every time Yan comes to the plate, I feel like he's hitting the ball hard. He calls a great game behind the plate. And I think, you know, having a veteran guy like that can only help Sean Murphy, you know, behind the plate and offensively. You know, Sean, as much as he's played, he's still got to keep in mind that he's a pretty young catcher, and it's not always easy to learn that position and handle a staff. So to have a guy like Yan come in and bring some insight to him has been huge. And then, obviously, Chafin, man, a few words, but he goes out there and competes every single time he's on the bump. You know, he's not scared. He doesn't shy away from any hitter, righty-handed or left-handed. It seems like he goes right after guys, and, you know, I feel like we're very confident every time he takes the mound. It's been really nice to see him.
Last thing for you. I know it's been written about, but you played high school ball with Nolan Arenado. I just want to know, when you guys were both on the left side of the infield, did a ball ever get through the two of you?
you might think not, but we both come a long way. You know, Nolan has always been, you know, uber talented. When he was in high school, he played a lot of shortstop. I was just trying to crack the lineup. You know, I was a lot younger, but you know, I still was growing into my own, and Nolan, I think, was still kind of grown into his body. He had a big body, but hadn't fully gotten all his coordination yet, I feel like. So I think a few balls might have scooted through there, but if you put us back on that same infield against high school players with both of us on the left side, I'd like our chances.
Matt, appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Over the weekend, Roxy spoke with Yankees manager Aaron Boone.
All right, Kevin, with the skipper of the New York Yankees, Aaron Boone. And Aaron, the team is just on an amazing roll right now. You've won the first two in this series, 13 straight wins. It's not just the offense, but with your ball club right now, Aaron, what are you seeing?
I'm seeing 26 guys in a room that are all contributing in meaningful ways. I think that's been the most satisfying thing of this is, first of all, I love the focus of our guys. We understand where we are in the season, how important all these games are. And there's kind of that just singular mindset of what can I do today to help us win a ball game. And it's really taken everyone, and everyone's had meaningful contributions. And that's been a lot of fun. And it's come from whether it's been the defense, base running, offense, you know, starting relievers, everyone's played a role in this. And, you know, as we've kind of gone through this stretch too, you know, we're beating good teams too. We're playing really good teams through this stretch too. And that's been something that it's just been fun to watch these guys go out and really compete as well as they are right now.
Even when you had some of the struggles, Aaron, earlier in the year, you were always confident in this group. And when you brought in a Rizzo to fit in, you brought in a Gallo, did that play in also in terms of the guys you already had in your clubhouse and how confident you were in them? And then you get these additions, and it seems like it's been a great boost for everybody.
No question. You know, those guys have been big, offering balance to our lineup. They've come in and fit in really well right away in the room. And one thing about this group that I never questioned, you know, even in our lowest points of the season, is there was always an underlying confidence that they had. And I think they always, while we were frustrated at times, I think they always believed that we were going to, you know, turn things around and play the way we're capable of. That never wavered. And that's starting to really show itself now.
And you look at the depth you have to your lineup, Aaron, and just it seems like there's the confidence 1 through 9 with this group. Even if you're off to a slow start, they'll get going at some point. Is that the way you look at this group, just because of the depth and you know how difficult it would be to pitch to your lineup?
Yeah, and that's always been kind of our mantra, I guess, here, or something we try to focus on is taking really tough and heavy at bats. And we feel like over time in the course of a game or the course of a week, that pays dividends, you know. So a pitcher may go through us a time or two and have success because they're really executing. But we feel like if we can make it difficult, more often than not, we're going to break through against them. And certainly, you know, over time, game in and game out, we're definitely going to break through if we're consistently taking tough team at bats. And we've done a lot better job of that over the last month or two.
Aaron, appreciate the time. Thanks.
You bet, Roxy.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Dave. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. We've got a couple here. Some good questions. We got Andrew Stout up first at Thomas AC Stout. Andrew writes in, so Adam Wainwright is tied for the second most wins in Major League Baseball, second most innings pitched, and an ERA under 3. Oh, and he turns 40 before his next start. Is he slipping, I guess maybe ascending into the NL Cy Young discussion? Slipping, I think, is a bad word there.
Well, I'm so excited, first of all, Taylor, to answer Bleacher tweets. This is very fun. So Adam Wainwright, no doubt, unbelievable year. A guy who kind of looked at the end of the line 2 or 3 years ago. Is he a Cy Young contender? I wouldn't go that far. I'd say maybe he might get some back-end votes, you know, fourth or fifth place. But if you look at some of the numbers, he's only 13th in the National League in WAR. He's 10th in ERA. There's so many NL starters having great years, you know, that Wainwright still is beyond, you know, to me, Walker Buehler is probably the leader at this point. You know, he's 13-2, 2.02 ERA. No doubt he's the favorite. Maybe Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, Kevin Gausman, Max Scherzer. See, this is where it's Wade Miley's having an unbelievable year. So Adam Wainwright, not really a Cy Young contender.
There you have it. Todd Alec Pratt at Todd Pratt 7 writes in, Craig Kimbrel has given up 5 earned runs and 2 home runs all season for teams that are not the Cubs. He's given up 6 earned runs and 3 home runs to a bad Cubs team. Have you ever seen a dominant player get traded midseason and struggle so badly against his old team?
Todd Pratt. I assume that's not the Todd Pratt who used to play for the Mets back in the day. That one would take some research to give you a good answer. My response here is, yeah, Craig Kimbrel and Liam Hendricks have both been scuffling a little bit. Mm-hmm. When they made that trade, we kind of expected they would have this absolute dominant 1-2 bullpen punch at the end of the games. And I think a lot of people, when they acquired Kimbrel, automatically made the White Sox the favorite to come out of the AL. But so far, they have not been a dominant duo. So that's something to watch for the White Sox in September. Can Hendricks and Kimbrel get back on track heading into the playoffs? But yeah, odd that he struggled against the Cubs since that trade.
The topic is made for podcasts or like radio. It's like, do the White Sox have a closer problem? What's Tony La Russa going to do? So hopefully they get it.
Well, it's interesting because we always evaluate these trades the day they happen at the deadline. And that one, everybody thought absolute great trade for the White Sox. Kimbrel had been, he'd been the best closer in baseball the first, you know, half with the Cubs, and he hasn't been that with the White Sox. Doesn't mean we get to October, he doesn't pitch, you know, 12 scoreless innings, but it's a little bit of a concern for Chicago right now.
Let's go to Andrew Campbell at Real Cam Drew. Andrew writes in, if the Yankees just keep on winning, is there any chance Garrett Cole sneaks in at the very end and steals the AL Cy Young Award? He's 13-6 so far, 200 strikeouts, which is second in Major League Baseball, and his ERA sits at 2.8, all while pitching in the AL East.
Well, Andrew, kind of a weird question, because I think it's always been Garrett Cole and Lance Lynn sort of in a 1-2 spot all year for the AL Cy Young, but now Lynn's had a couple rough outings lately. His ERA, which was in the low twos, is up to 2.59. So I think Cole is the favorite right now. He leads the AL in Fangraphs WAR, 2.80 ERA. To me, he's the number one guy, so I don't think he's sneaking up on anybody. The guy who might be sneaking up is Robbie Ray. He's only 9-5, but 2.72 ERA. A ton of strikeouts. He's on a roll. So I think Cole's the favorite. I think Robbie Ray is number two right now. And Lance Lynn is probably down to number three with Nathan Eovaldi. If you like WAR, he's kind of a dark horse. He's second to Cole in a WAR.
Bobby Meacham at Bobby Meacham 1 writes in, Giancarlo Stanton has been on a tear at the plate since about the same time he started playing some games in the outfield. Do we know who was behind the decision not to play the field all these months? Was it Stanton or the Yankees?
Yeah, it's a good question. Another former player writing in, Bobby Meacham, up and coming superstar for the Yankees in the 80s. That's a good question. You know, yeah, Stanton did not play his first game in the outfield until, I believe, July 30th, the first game Anthony Rizzo played with the team. It does make you wonder, is there a correlation here that Stanton has started hitting since he's been playing the field? I don't know. Look, obviously they were DHing him to try to preserve his health, but you got to let these guys play. Stanton was always a pretty good defensive outfielder with the Marlins, so he's not going to hurt the team out there. I think getting them in the field has helped.
And last one for today, PK Steinberg, our friend, writes in, honestly, what's Tampa Bay's secret freaking sauce, and why can't the Pirates, Orioles, Rockies, etc. emulate and replicate it? They're a small market team with huge market success. They scoff at the Angels and Dodgers and Padres and Yankees. What is it for you, Dave?
Well, how much time do we have to go into this? No, look, the key to the Rays, one, organizational depth. They draft well. They develop well, both in the States and Latin America. And the key, of course, is the rapid turnover of the roster. They'll trade a player, not as he's entering his final year before free agency, but 2 or 3 years before he hits free agency, which means they get a lot more in return. You know, if a player has a career year, they'll flip them, you know, and get more younger players in return. Look, I don't think it's probably easy to be a fan of the Rays because you're always learning new players, but that churn of the roster, they make it work. It takes a lot of guts to trade young players coming off good years, but they're not afraid to do that. And they basically have been competitive now since 2008. It's hard to pull off with their resources. They've done it, and they continue to do it. They're going to win that division.
I'm over here. You can hear it now. The world's smallest violin for playing for Tampa fans because they have to learn new player names. Oof,
yeah, that maybe was not the best way to phrase that, but look, no, they do a great job finding relievers, you know, kind of out of nowhere. I hate to give the credit to the front office because it's the players who win and lose games. It's more the cohesiveness throughout the organization. And I know when I talk to Rays players, they buy in completely. And they know they're not going to be spending 6 years in Tampa Bay. They know at some point they're going to get traded. But somehow Kevin Cash and the coaching staff and the front office get complete, absolute buy-in on what they're trying to do there. And it works.
Pretty jelly over here. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Buster for joining us from the airport. Thanks to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.